What a weekend for the Mountaineers. A pair of WV wrestlers earn All-American status in Kansas City. The WV women's basketball team advances in the NCAA tournament. And the WV baseball team avenges being no-hit Friday night to take the series on the road against number 17 Oklahoma on Saturday. Ryan Decker and Kevin Redfern here with you on the latest edition of the Gold and Blue Nation podcast, which is, of course, presented to you by Elite Roofing and Construction. Roof with the best or leak with the rest. As you can tell, a lot has happened this weekend, so off the top, it's a good reminder to visit goldandbluenation.com for all of your WVU sports coverage needs. But Kevin, typically this would be a baseball-only podcast recapping the series against the Sooners, but I think we have to start with that win on the hardwood in the NCAA tournament. West Virginia, the 8th seed, takes down 9th seeded Princeton, 63-53. WVU keeps on dancing.
It's almost like there's more pressure for these 8 and 9 seeds, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you've got such a closely seeded game, a lot of high expectations for both teams. But WVU, I mean, if you can win that 8-9 tilt and then go in with some momentum to face a 1 seed, now you almost kind of flip that coin and put yourself in a great position. You're an underdog. You've got some momentum, maybe better than some other seeds who have made it to the round of 32. But yeah, Mark Kellogg's crew, the Mark Kellogg effect is in full fashion, getting a big win over Princeton and sticking true to their identity in that win.
Well, the identity took a while to reveal itself for West Virginia. That defense, that swarming defense that West Virginia plays with didn't really show up until the third quarter. WVU trailed by 3 after 1, trailed by as many as 9 points in the opening half, and West Virginia didn't take its first lead in this game against Princeton until Kylie Blackston went on a 5-0 run by herself there in the third quarter. But that's when the defense woke up for the Mountaineers. WVU forces 9 turnovers and scores 12 points off of those turnovers in the first 5 minutes and 20 seconds of the third quarter, and that truly is what turned this game around, ultimately giving WVU the win. Now, JJ Quinterly, from start to finish, she was fantastic Saturday night. 29 points, 7 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 assists for her. Jordan Harrison had 15 points. Kylie Blackston chips in 10. So those were your leading scorers for West Virginia. Certainly have to give it up to Caitlin Chen and Madison St. Rose, as well as Ellie Mitchell for Princeton. Really good players. They put in great performances. Ellie Mitchell had 15 rebounds for Princeton. But West Virginia just, I think, better athletes overall, better defensive system, and a little bit more firepower. That's what gets the Mountaineers the win and advances them to play Iowa on Monday.
You mentioned it, but those first 5.5 minutes of the third quarter won WVU this game. Gave them a big enough cushion where you can miss, what, 12, 13 free throws as a team. No, that even more than that.
Even
they
more,
went 18 for 36. Only 15% they missed 18 free throws. Like you mentioned, 9-10 turnovers in a 6-minute span. In the first half, they only forced 5 turnovers and only turned those into 4 points. So, I mean, obviously a clear juxtaposition there between the second half and the first half for Mark Kellogg's defense. But, I mean, I'll even zoom out a little bit. If you say that those 6 minutes win you the game and that defensive identity and those turnovers and those points won you, I'd like to say that Mark Kellogg won WVU this game. And this is just a great snapshot into how the season has went and how much of an impact him and his scheme have had on this team.
You talk about Mark Kellogg specifically winning this game, and it's an interesting point you bring up, because obviously you could tell the adjustment they made at halftime, whatever that was to get better defensive results, certainly worked. Mark Kellogg makes history Saturday night, becoming the first head coach in WVU women's basketball history to win an NCAA tournament game in his first year with the program. He has also secured just the 7th 25 wins or more season in program history. In terms of the NCAA tournament wins, he's just the 2nd coach on either men's or women's side. Bob Huggins is the other one to get an NCAA tournament win in his first year with the program. But the adjustment he made at halftime, obviously big. Now over the next, as we're recording this late Saturday night, the next close to 40-ish hours in prep for Iowa, whatever rabbit he's got in his hat, it's time to pull it out now. Anything he hasn't shown yet this year, this is the time in the next 40 hours that he'll be implementing things like that, right?
And likewise, anything that they can take from that last hour, and gosh, it was probably longer than that given how long the last minute of play was, but that last hour and a half, 2 hours of the game, I mean, That's exactly what they're looking for, is using their defense to turn into offense. And in the first half, some of those half-court sets did not look good from the Mountaineers. And I think you saw Mark on the sidelines, even after missed shots from Princeton, not necessarily transition opportunities, he was yelling and pointing, screaming, move fast, move fast. So that's where they thrive. And when you've got arguably the greatest player in the history of the sport coming up on Monday, defense is going to remain the point of emphasis. Maybe less so on the turnovers and just kind of getting Caitlin Clark to shoot as low of a percentage as possible. If this team's going to make any noise in March, it's going to be with its defense. I don't think there's any lie about that. That's not no surprise. It's just going to be about execution on Monday.
So you mentioned Monday. You mentioned Caitlin Clark. It will be West Virginia, the number 8 seed, taking on Iowa, the 1 seed. It'll be the 6th meeting all time between these two programs. WVU 1-4 all time thus far against the Hawkeyes. That lone win was back in 2009. Two programs last met in 2018. Now, Iowa won its first round game on Saturday, 91-65 over the 16 seed Holy Cross. Caitlin Clark had 27 points and 10 assists in that one. Something to watch here for Iowa potentially is one of their forwards, Hannah Stahlke. She played just 10 minutes, played just the first half. Iowa's coaching staff decided to hold her out of the second half, saying she just didn't feel well in that one. It's something to watch, just see if that's just a little chink in the armor that maybe West Virginia can take advantage of a little bit here on Monday. Now, Iowa has won 7 straight games and is 30-4 on the season. The good news is for WVU, if there's good news when you're taking on Iowa, is that you do have direct tape to look at. Kansas State played Iowa twice. Iowa State also played the Hawkeyes this year. You know, just on past experience, how those teams play, so you've got a good idea of how to maybe match up and do some things against the Hawkeyes. But obviously, it's a tall task. It's a very tall order for Mark Kellogg and company.
One thing they won't have the luxury of is knowing what that stadium is going to feel like on Monday. I mean, what, 15, 16,000 strong are expected at Carver Hawkeye Arena. If you watched both the Iowa Holy Cross and the West Virginia Princeton games, there's no way you couldn't have noticed how much of a difference the crowd was in the same stadium mere hours apart. Once the Hawkeye fans cleared out, it was pretty much dead there in Iowa City. That's not going to be the case on Monday. It is going to be packed. It is going to be 80% Iowa fans, and is going to be the loudest environment any of these Mountaineers have played in, probably. So that's going to be an adjustment. How they respond to that is going to be very, very interesting, kind of how they weather that storm. But definitely something to watch.
Was trying to find quickly here. Let's see here. Looks like the largest attendance record, and I'm not sure if this number is outdated or not, is just under 16,000 there at Carver Hawkeye Arena. 15,955 is the number I'm seeing. But again, don't know if that number is correct. Was trying to scan this quickly. Can't see. Okay, actually, let me scroll up further. And had I read this correctly, an NCAA attendance record for women's basketball was set on February 3rd, 1985. 22,157 were in attendance at Carver Hawkeye Arena as Iowa lost to Ohio State in that game. Again, I'm not sure if that number is 100% up to date, but that might be. That might be the number that's within reach on Monday, potentially. Caitlin Clark's last game, a 30-4 Iowa team that will be playing its final game there this season. Certainly 22,157 might be a number to keep in your head on Monday night.
Yeah, and like I just mentioned, that is going to be overwhelming amount of Hawkeye gold. I'm not sure what they are, what gold, what Pantone shade the Hawkeyes sport, but yeah, that's going to be the most hostile environment that WVU has played in this season by a long shot.
Mark Kellogg was asked about that earlier in the week before West Virginia made the trip to Iowa City. And I think someone asked him, kind of tongue in cheek, you know, have you been blaring the speaker system within the practice facility trying to get you ready for that? And the point he made, and I've heard other coaches make this in other sports as well, is once you get to a certain decibel level, it all just kind of sounds the same. There's only so much you can prep for that. So I think to a degree, I guess West Virginia probably did prep for that somewhat, but you can only turn up speakers so loud.
You can't
replicate it.
You can't forget Education Day, though, as well. I mean, that's how much does a couple of thousand screaming elementary school students compare to some crazy Midwest Iowa fans.
Yeah.
Maybe somewhat on par, but I don't know.
And you can say that as a Midwesterner yourself.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I grew up in Big Ten country. They don't mess around when it comes to their teams.
So it will be WVU in Iowa at 8 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN, so a primetime matchup for the Mountaineers. I guess, Kevin, obviously, as we've mentioned, as any fan who's probably listening to this knows, it's going to take a quite an effort for West Virginia to pull off this upset. What's not necessarily the key, but what maybe needs to happen more than anything else if WVU is going to pull off an upset? Because, after all, this is March Madness. Anything can happen at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we've alluded to the defense, and if we're going to get into specifics of it, I mean, if you look at the first round matchup, Princeton came into this to the game Saturday night shooting about 45% from the field. WVU held them to 33.3%. That's just regular field goal percentage from the three-point line. Princeton led the Ivy League in three-point percentage. They were somewhere in the 32 or 33% range. They got held to 28.5% on Saturday night. So if you can knock down Iowa's percentage numbers like that by 10%, by 5%, that immediately puts you in the game, in my opinion. If you want to win a game, that's going to come down to their offensive execution. WVU shot 52.5% from the field Saturday night, which is up about 7% from their yearly total. They shot the three ball pretty on par with how they have been, about 33%. But it's going to be the looks that JJ Quinterly gets. And if she doesn't get those looks, is there going to be someone to step up to kind of live in that 15 to 20 point range? Because if JJ's there, you're going to need another player there too. I mean, JJ gave 29 points, almost 30, over 30 if she hits her free throws. So in my opinion, it comes down to defensive execution, doing what they're known for. That's going to keep them competitive. If they want to pull off a crazy upset, one of the most high profile upsets in the tournament's history, it's going to take an offensive showing that we've only seen a few times this year. Kellogg's talked about wanting to get three players in double figures every game. I think this one's probably going to need four or five.
I think at least, because you tend to think Caitlin Clark is going to get anywhere from 25 to 35 on average a night. So typically for West Virginia, that's two scorers to kind of cancel that out. So you'll need at least one or two other players in double figures to help kind of buoy the production there. I was trying to look to see what Holy Cross did, because Holy Cross was actually in its first round game against Iowa, at least early on, only trailed by two after the first quarter. Holy Cross made four threes in that opening period, only made three the rest of the game. The second quarter really swung that one as Iowa kind of got going in the second quarter. I think the big thing for me is similar to what Holy Cross did. You have to get off to a good start against Iowa. Do whatever you can to try to take that crowd out of it. And then the big thing is, and it's a debate I think sometimes coaches have or maybe fans have, when you're taking on a team like in Iowa, where Caitlin Clark is obviously the focal point, do you let her get hers and then worry about everyone 2 through 11?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Or do you really lock up 2 through 11 and just say Caitlin's going to do whatever she's going to do? If she beats us, it's the greatest player in the last 30 plus years, maybe ever, who beats us? That's the question I think maybe Mark Kellogg and his staff might be kind of wrestling with a little bit.
Yeah, if she's logging close to 10 assists every night like she did against Holy Cross, then I think that's kind of a valiant game plan to have, is accept that what she's going to provide. And if you can take away her help and kind of just make the offense all about her, kind of that, you know, that feeling in a basketball game where it's like, if this player gets the ball, they're going to shoot.
Right.
That's probably what WVU might want out of Caitlin Clark, because she does find comfort in dishing and being that game manager sometimes. But yeah, I think that's exactly right. It's going to be There's definitely more than just Caitlin Clark at stake here.
Yeah, certainly so. It should be a great atmosphere. Certainly, as we talked about in the preview podcast a few days ago, should be something that I think everyone involved hopefully remembers, regardless of the outcome, whatever happens on Monday night. Just remember kind of that you were in that environment, you were in that game, which is Caitlin Clark's last home game in an Iowa uniform. I think that's really important for a lot of people to remember that West Virginia will kind of have that little place in history there, no matter what happens Monday night. So that's what's at stake. a place in the Sweet 16 in this year's NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament, WVU versus Iowa, 8 p.m. on Monday night on ESPN. Of course, we have coverage at goldandbluenation.com from Saturday night's game. We'll also hear from the Mountaineers again on Sunday, and we'll provide you some of their comments whenever those are made available to us. So make sure to stay with us here. We are going to have more coverage on the WVU baseball team and what a turnaround they had over a 24-hour span this weekend. If you weren't paying attention to what they were doing on the prairie, make sure to stay with us. What a turnaround it was. You're listening to the Golden Blue Nation podcast.
Elite Roofing and Construction is West Virginia's and the region's top reliable roofing professionals. Elite Roofing LLC specializes in residential and commercial roofing services and is dedicated to providing customer service that is second to none. Whether you have a new construction project or need to replace an old or damaged roof, Elite Roofing offers roofing repair and replacement services with free estimates. We also work with a variety of roofing types, including metal, shingle, tile, and rubber roofing. All of our work is completed by trained and certified roofing specialists. We never use subcontractors to complete any of our work. We work with insurance and financing is available. Elite Roofing and Construction. Roof with the best or leak with the rest.
Despite the ill-fated efforts of President Biden and his wealthy New York friends, West Virginia coal is thriving and being shipped to 45 countries worldwide. Given its high quality and clean burning properties, countries across the globe are demanding and consuming it, and in-state production continues to grow. With billions of dollars of recent investment in West Virginia mining operations, combined with the reliability of our coal-fired electric manufacturing facilities, West Virginia coal is here to stay. No other fuel in the world matches West Virginia coal for base load generation and steel making. Like a good friend, it's always been and always will be there, keeping the lights on and contributing greatly to our growing economy. In fact, coal continues to sustain 50,000 plus West Virginia jobs, putting food on the table for Mountain State families. Visit friendsofcoal.org to learn more. A message from the Friends of Coal.
Back here on the Gold and Blue Nation podcast, Ryan Decker and Kevin Renfern here with you in our Morgantown studios. We just took a look at the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament action regarding West Virginia. So now let's flip the page to what's been going on the diamond the last 24, 48 hours for WVU. Kevin, what if I told you that in one day West Virginia would be no hit and lose by a gajillion, and then the next day they sweep a doubleheader against the number 17 team in the country?
I think the words must win have come out of at least my mouth within the last 24 hours after WVU got no hit by Oklahoma on Friday night. I'm kind of at a loss for words with this team right now. I mean, every punch that they take, they seem to give one right back. I mean, after the Mountaineers get no hit by Oklahoma in game one Friday night, people are starting to chat a little bit about maybe where is this team going. I mean, our Facebook comments were pretty crazy at the final graphic. But now all of a sudden you come back and you win the series by sweeping a doubleheader on Saturday at Oklahoma. And you win both of those games fairly convincingly with a very robust offense that was quite literally non-existent on Friday night. After that game, West Virginia is now in third place in the Big 12. So, I mean, like a day ago, we were talking about how this season could maybe get off the rails a little bit, and a lot of that is due to injuries, and a lot of that is due to unpredicted stuff. But, I mean, after a roller coaster of a weekend, WVU's in a position to go compete for conference title.
It's funny you brought up the must-win talk that's been kind of swirling here a little bit over the last couple days.
It's only March.
And it's only March. But it's funny that's where you started, because that's where I was going to start as well. I did a radio hit in Oklahoma earlier this week. It was kind of broached to me. Is WVU in must-win territory? I said, it's funny you asked, because I just happened to look this up last night, which was Thursday night now, that, you know, West Virginia in the years that it's made the NCAA baseball tournament has gotten off to shaky starts. Predominantly, it's gotten off to some shaky starts. I mean, been under 500 almost at this point in the season. And then I say that to say, to the radio hit I was doing, you know, I don't think we're in must-win territory yet. Give it a couple weeks, see where this team is at. We all have to remember, no J.J. Weatherholt, no Logan Sauve, the works. Then they get no hit on Friday, and I'm thinking, man, everything I'd said just went out the window. It doesn't matter, because you have entered must-win territory because you just got no hit on the road, and now things are starting to get a little shaky. Yeah. But again, what do we know? I think the past 24 hours have been summed up perfectly by Andrew Caridi, the voice of the Mountaineers, at least for baseball and women's basketball, on Twitter. He said, baseball is a silly game because you can be on the wrong end of a double-digit no-hitter yesterday and then win the series with six home runs the next against the first-place team in the Big 12. And then he added, and this is without JJ and Sabe. That's where West Virginia is right now. You talk about them taking hits and just kind of getting off the proverbial mat. That's where they are. And if I guess to West Virginia and Randy Mazey's credit, if they can survive doing that until JJ and maybe Logan come back, it's a game to play, and then you let the number two overall pick potentially in the country for Major League Baseball just wreak havoc. Because I think people are forgetting that this team is missing a .394 batting average, 16 home runs, and 30-plus stolen bases. That's what this team is missing right now through 21, now 24 games.
When I look at this, and I'm being a complete prisoner of the moment here, when I look at this series, I'm going to predict that this is a turning point for the WVU baseball team, because in the first couple weeks of the season, the first 2 months, I should say, of the season, you kind of knew what you were getting from WVU. Friday nights, they were going to be most competitive. Aiden Major was the most consistent pitcher on the team by far through the first couple series. And then things kind of started unraveling on Saturdays and Sundays as the pitching kind of grew a little bit thin as the series went on. The reason why I think this is a turning point this week is because these two games on Saturday, the two wins and the loss, I should say, on Friday, played out completely differently. Mm-hmm. Aiden Major, who is your most reliable pitcher, lays an egg on Friday, doesn't even get through three innings, walks as many batters as he gets out. Then on Saturday, you got Derek Clark throw the first complete game of the season. Mm-hmm. And Derek Clark, by the way, very impressed with him. He could be a really good pitcher this year, I think, for WVU. And then in game two, Tyler Spetalski doesn't get out of the third inning, but then David Hagman comes out of the pen right when you think that you're going to have to exhaust the rest of your bullpen over the next seven innings. Hagman says, no, I got it from here, and goes the distance, like 6 2/3, 6 1/3, 6 2/3. Yep. So now you're starting to see some depth on the pitching side, and you're seeing a team learn how to win when they're not just cruising with their starter. Because it's easy to win baseball games when your starter's cruising. If you can go up early and your pitcher's throwing up a 0-1 or a 2-count every game, those games have flow to it. They're easy to win. These ones where they didn't battle behind today or on Saturday, but faced some early game adversity for sure. And if you can learn how to win those games, those are the games that you're going to like to call back on when it comes to conference tournament time, maybe NCAA tournament time.
We will get to this point in a second, but it's interesting you say that this could be a turning point for West Virginia this season, because the schedule, at least to a degree, does allow that to be correct, that prediction right there. But quickly, I guess we go game by game here. West Virginia gets no hit Friday night. They lose 13-0 in that first game against Oklahoma. Nothing went right, as you said. Aiden Major got hit around there a little bit in game one of this series. Just things didn't go right there. Then game two happens after this series had been moved to a doubleheader on Saturday. West Virginia finally gets a hit there, I believe in the second inning. They went 13 innings without a hit, and then the long ball starts to fly a little bit for the Mountaineers. They win game two of the series, game one of the doubleheader, 9-5 over Oklahoma. As you said, Derek Clark pitched really well in that game. A complete game, 9 innings, gave up 10 hits and 4 earned runs, struck out 7, but he got the job done there. Some of those late runs coming in the ninth inning as Oklahoma tried to mount a comeback, but ultimately to no avail there. And then in game two of the doubleheader, you mentioned David Hageman and the job he did out of the pen. 6 2/3 innings, only 4 hits allowed, 10 punch outs out of the bullpen. It's interesting because Randy Mazey has a knack of knowing which guy in his bullpen to truly be that long reliever. Now in baseball, that role has kind of vanished. You don't really have a long reliever anymore. But if there's one guy who's keeping that role alive, it's Randy Mazey. I can remember years ago in the Big 12 tournament, multiple games, the starter, for whatever reason, couldn't get past the first or second inning, and Randy Mazey pressed all the right buttons to get a long reliever, sometimes to bridge the rest of the game. So that's not surprising, honestly, to see Mazey be able to do that. But the home runs, certainly there in game two. Five home runs Saturday night for West Virginia. Benjamin Lumsden goes yard, Grant Hussey, Michael Peraza, Aaron Jameson goes yard again, and then Spencer Barnett goes yard all in game two. And then it was Reed Chumley who went yard in game one for the Mountaineers. He's got, I believe, five home runs over the last seven games, I believe now, eight now, including the game two. But you mentioned how West Virginia kind of turned things around here. It's a little bit of both. What they were able to do with the plate, finally being able to get on base a little bit, and then seeing the ball go out of the ballpark a little bit. But really what stands out, I think, from this weekend, and especially on Saturday, is what they were able to do on the mound.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when it comes to that long reliever, I mean, you say that it's something that Mazey's keeping alive. I think that a lot of people would like to keep it alive, but their teams and their players are just not equipped to do it. There was so much, you know, gray area around who was even going to be in the starting rotation versus who might be a midweek guy versus who might be coming out of the bullpen. And I think that's almost, there's two sides of the coin, but I think it's almost helping out the Mountaineers right now, because you have now five, six, seven guys who are stretched out. I mean, they can plug and play starters on the mound every week, basically, even if they do face more injuries. David Hageman is one of those guys. He's a guy who's, I think, only gotten one weekend start this year. But, I mean, his stuff and his stamina is Division I weekend starter. Right. Like, he fits that mold perfectly. And while the rotation might not be performing well as a group right now, that stuff kind of sorts itself out over the span of the year. Hageman, it would be great to have him in that long relief role. To me, I think he's better than that. I think that he probably might see some more starts as the season goes on. But when you have that depth, and when you have pitchers who've started at other schools, who've started for you, but who also have a ton of bullpen experience, it's just a bunch of Swiss Army knives.
You made the point earlier about how this could be a turning point for West Virginia in its season. Coming back from being no hit on Friday to then sweep a doubleheader against the number 17 team in the country on Saturday. The schedule does kind of bear that out. You've got an Akron team coming to town on Tuesday. That should be a winnable game for the Mountaineers. Oklahoma State then comes to town this coming weekend. The Cowboys, not up to their normal standard of where they were. Certainly they were flying under the radar, or maybe appropriately flying under the radar coming into this season, and they've not gotten off to the greatest start in the world. Then an open date right now for West Virginia on April 2nd. We'll see if they can maybe get an extra game in there against someone in the midweek. And then after that, Kansas. Three-game weekend series on the road against Kansas. Again, another team. Most of the Big 12 teams this year, really outside of Oklahoma, have not, and Houston as well, actually, have not gotten off to that great of starts, especially in league play. So this conference is now wide open. Then Marshall, looking at April 10th, a team you've already beaten twice, beaten handedly twice. Then UCF, a team that's, you know, had some good results so far, but certainly is still getting used to life in the Big 12. Then a game against Pitt, and then the schedule kind of ratchets up after that with Texas Tech and some other teams. But certainly the point you made earlier about this possibly being a turning point for WVU, the schedule kind of bears that out. That opportunity is there, and what an opportunity, possibly a great time for maybe J.J. Weatherholt to come back. Again, we don't know that, but if that's where this is trending, the next couple weeks would be a nice kind of cushy landing spot for him to come back in and potentially work his way back into things.
Yeah, you'd hope that they'd kind of mix him back into the fold if he does come back when they're playing their best ball, and it certainly seems to be set up that way. If they're lucky, the weather might turn a little bit for the best. You got a series against UCF, but that one's going to be in Morgantown, I believe. After how well this team performed in league play last year, the expectation is clearly 2 out of 3 every weekend at the least. So I don't think those expectations have ever changed this year, despite maybe a little bit rockier start than they would have hoped. But no matter who the conference opponent, Big 12 opponent is, like you said, Oklahoma State, maybe not the same identity that it's had in years past. 2 wins every weekend, that's the goal. And the more you incorporate some of these guys back into the lineup, the more those odds increase.
two out of every three. That's kind of the recipe for baseball, pretty much at all levels. Just win your series. Of course, college baseball, a little bit different format scheduling-wise than, say, Major League Baseball or Minor League Baseball. But, yeah, you take two out of three every weekend, and you can be in prime position to be playing in the postseason, which, again, after Friday night, I think a lot of people were writing this WVU baseball team off of having any sort of chance.
I was skeptical, Ryan. I was skeptical. Yeah. Still am, but, I mean, wow. I mean, that Oklahoma team is not something, or is not a joke. And also, too, we haven't mentioned going into Norman for the last time ever as Big 12 foes.
Yeah, how about that?
I mean, it's a little bit of a more meaningful win for a program, always nice. I mean, good for the legacy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a good good memory to imprint on Oklahoma fans is, hey, you know, here's just one out the door, so to speak, really out the door, I guess, if you're West Virginia. Of course, they might meet again in the Big 12 tournament later this year where Oklahoma maybe can get the last laugh, so to speak. But a good parting shot there from West Virginia as it heads back home victorious in a series against number 17 Oklahoma. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll be back to wrap things up here on the latest edition of the Golden Blue Nation podcast.
Elite Roofing and Construction is West Virginia's and the region's top reliable roofing professionals. Elite Roofing LLC specializes in residential and commercial roofing services and is dedicated to providing customer service that is second to none. Whether you have a new construction project or need to replace an old or damaged roof, Elite Roofing offers roofing repair and replacement services with free estimates. We also work with a variety of roofing types, including metal, shingle, tile, and rubber roofing. All of our work is completed by trained and certified roofing specialists. We never use subcontractors to complete any of our work. We work with insurance and financing is available. Elite Roofing and Construction. Roof with the best or leak with the rest.
Despite the ill-fated efforts of President Biden and his wealthy New York friends, West Virginia coal is thriving and being shipped to 45 countries worldwide. Given its high quality and clean burning properties, countries across the globe are demanding and consuming it, and in-state production continues to grow. With billions of dollars of recent investment in West Virginia mining operations, combined with the reliability of our coal-fired electric manufacturing facilities, West Virginia coal is here to stay. No other fuel in the world matches West Virginia coal for base load generation and steel making. Like a good friend, it's always been and always will be there, keeping the lights on and contributing greatly to our growing economy. In fact, coal continues to sustain 50,000 plus West Virginia jobs, putting food on the table for Mountain State families. Visit friendsofcoal.org to learn more. A message from the Friends of Coal.
Wrapping up here on the Gold and Blue Nation podcast, it is prediction time. We were talking in the break. All right, Kevin, predictions for WVU versus Iowa on a Monday night prime time under the lights in Carver Hawkeye Arena. West Virginia will do what in the round of 32 in the NCAA tournament?
They'll play a basketball game.
Yes, they will.
That's for sure.
That is guaranteed.
And I think they're going to compete, too. I mean, we talked about kind of the difference of what's going to keep them in the game versus what's going to win them the game. I definitely think they're going to be competitive in this one. I think it's going to be a great basketball game. I think it's going to be a game that is really, really good for the sport overall and massive for Mark Kellogg's program. However, I do not think they're going to escape Iowa City with a win over the Hawkeyes on Monday night. And here's the reason why. It's maybe less of a tangible reason than someone like in our field might have, but Caitlin Clark, I mean, we're kind of, you might have heard, feel like you've heard her name too much over the past month or so, but a lot of the times that's for a reason, and we're witnessing something that's on the level of greatness, and we throw that word around a lot, but Caitlin Clark is experiencing greatness right now. She's broken records, she's transcending the game, she's doing a lot, and those players don't lose in the round of 32. It just doesn't happen. Not when it's their last game in their stadium ever. Not when they could set attendance records. Not when it's on primetime ESPN. They just win those games. If they don't, then they're having debates for the next 30 years about who's really the GOAT. And that would happen if they do lose this game. But I'm imagining Caitlin Clark is going to have a phenomenal game. I imagine she's going to score somewhere close to 30 or more points. But I'm going to say Iowa gets the win. By five.
By five?
Yeah.
You're saying West Virginia keeps it really close.
Oh, huh? Yeah. Yeah, no, it's going to be a game. It's not going to come down to the last shot, but it's going to be a game.
Okay. It's going to be a game. That's for sure. That's for sure. So I was looking it up. The most points West Virginia has given up, giving up this season, I believe by my count, is 78.
That's not that high.
Which is not that high. I think that number is going to be broken on Monday night. Just because of how much of a well-oiled machine Iowa can be offensively. I mean, they struggled really in the first half. Again, against Holy Cross, I know it's a lesser opponent, but and they still put up 91 points on Saturday. I really do think West Virginia, they need to, and I think they will get off to a good start in this game, but I just think Iowa at home, given everything that surrounds this particular game, will be a little much for WVU, as it would be, for, I think, for almost any team that steps into that environment on Monday night. I'm going to say West Virginia falls, I'll say by 15, I think the fourth quarter ends up becoming a difference, or maybe it's the third quarter and West Virginia is able to hang around, but the second half makes the difference there. I'll say that they lose by 15, but certainly, as I think we talked about in the first segment, an important game, a game that no matter the score, I think just is going to be good for the sport of basketball, as you said. I think Mark Kellogg has said that as well about the first two rounds and the opportunities that awaited them in Iowa City.
Yeah, I mentioned this on the pre-tournament podcast, but now that it's official, I mean, no matter how you slice it, it is extremely likely that at least 3 million people will be watching on TV Monday night. We talk about
that might be low, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. We talk about 20,000 in the stadium, but that is nothing compared to the eyeballs that are going to be on this game. And also, at the same time, there is, if I'm remembering correctly, based on the schedule, there's no men's tournament going on at that time.
Correct.
So this has the spotlight of all of American sports, which is just, I mean, we've alluded to it, but a crazy luxury for Mark Kellogg and his team. But yeah, this could be the biggest, I'll go on a limb, could say it's the biggest West Virginia University sporting event of the past year, and maybe of the next year.
I was wondering earlier today, once it became clear that West Virginia was going to advance to face Iowa, is this maybe the biggest game in women's basketball history?
It would the sport?
It would, I'm the sorry, program. For WVU. Oh, for yeah, WVU, I'm yeah. sorry. Yeah, let's clarify that one. I mean, it could be. Certainly, I think it would be up there, if not definitely, the biggest win if West Virginia were to pull that off. The biggest game, I don't have the knowledge to fully say that, but I would have to say it's up there in terms of historical importance for what this game means. It's up there for sure. It's one that, you know, again, win or lose, it's going to go down in the books. West Virginia's a part of history on Monday.
Yep, and if you do win, I mean, those pictures are going to be plastered on the WVU Coliseum walls. Yeah. You're going to see them everywhere walking around campus. It would be a really special moment.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Golden Blue Nation podcast. Of course, as always, make sure to stay up to date with WVU athletics of all kinds at goldandbluenation.com and on the always free Gold and Blue Nation app. You can find that on any of the appropriate stores for your mobile devices. And then always tune into any of the Golden Blue Nation podcast episodes that we'll have. We're trying to get some interviews lined up with various people here to get you some different types of episodes, but also we'll be doing baseball recap podcasts as the season moves along. And there's some good interviews that we've done over the past year or so that are on the back burner as well that are there in the archives, I guess I should say. But for Kevin Redfern, I'm Ryan Decker. You have been listening to the Golden Blue Nation podcast presented by Elite Roofing and Construction. Roof with the best or leak with the rest. We'll see you later.